KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. You're listening to Radio Orbit. My name is Mike Hagan. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Good evening to y'all. Good day to you. Good morning. Whomever you may be, wherever you might be as you listen to this radio program, welcome to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and I'll be with you here for the next 3 hours. We do it every Monday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. Got a wild and sexy show for you ahead tonight, so stick around and enjoy. Before all the fun, a quick thank you, however, to Corey, New Wave Radio Theater, every week before this program at 10 o'clock, 1 hour ahead of this show. Corey does it, New Wave Radio Theater, great stuff every Monday, and a great way to begin or lead into this program, I might say. So I love it. Corey's awesome, and I look forward to the program next week, as I always do, okay? All right, Kelvin and Jason and Eric the Red all together tonight, including Paul, a new guy doing some stuff here at the station. All four of them in between 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock. They do it jazz plus blues equals half pint medicine. Tech radio, keeping us up on the outrageous metamorphosing landscape of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off, Uncommon Light, from 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Good music, good talk, good news, a radio remedy on a clear, cool Monday night. Moon about half full. Really cold, actually, outside, but it's winter, you know. So, expectable, I guess. Wild times all around planet Earth, though, regardless of the weather. And you're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. Glad to be here with you and a part of it all. Okay? All right, thanks to all of you who joined us last week. The usual hearty thank you goes out to Jonathan Zapp, another fascinating guest and just a really fun program last week. Jonathan has a great ability to rap on a whole bunch of different subjects and do so in a manner that's really well-spoken, but also fun and captivating. And I appreciate it. It was great. I love talking to John. It was cool. We'll have him on the program again sometime soon. You know, sometimes I get criticism about the show that the interviews are too long, too intense, too this, that, or the other thing. And, you know, that people won't stay focused that long and they will lose interest. But I sort of disagree. I give the audience credit, first of all, for paying attention. And for those who aren't willing to listen to somebody talk for a couple, 3 hours or whatever, well, you know, the show's just not for them. It's simple as that. But I know plenty of people who can spend 2 hours sitting in front of the television or watching a movie or whatever. So I don't really see the difference between doing that and, you know, laying down or sitting next to the radio and listening to a radio program for a couple, 3 hours. If you close your eyes, I mean, the imagery is sort of the same. I mean, my God, listen to an interview with Paul Laffoley or Jonathan Zapp, for that matter, or many of the other guests that are on this program frequently. I think of Kent Stedman, of course, first and foremost, you know, because he's a great storyteller. And radio has always been about good stories. And one of the things that I try to do on the show here is bring people on that have, you know, interesting and informative stuff to talk about, but also that can tell good stories. And I'm pretty pleased with the, you know, with the guest list that many of the men and women who are on this program are very good storytellers, and Kent certainly tops among them. But Jonathan, wonderful, and I think of the show with Paul Laffoley just around the new year, and my God, you close your eyes and listen to Paul Laffoley talk, and he'll take you, you know, a million light years away. So at any rate, the show is not for everyone, and, you know, nothing is. So, you know, listen to what you dig, and if this isn't it, you know, listen to whatever it is. And if this is it, well, welcome, and I'm glad that you're here and enjoying the program, okay? Anyway, thanks to Jonathan Zapp, for a wonderful talk and a great program last week. On the web, zapporacle.com. While we're thanking folks, music last week from Elsinore, rock and roll from Champaign, Illinois. Thanks to Ryan for getting me the music and allowing me to share it with y'all. Elsinore actually in town sometime soon, I think. The Blue Fugue on the 8th of September. Elsinore will be there. I'm not sure who they're playing with, but that'll be a great show. And you can catch them, what, about a month from now, a little less than that, 3 weeks or so. Elsinore at the Blue Fugue on the 8th of February. By the way, all of the musicians that are featured on the program can be found on the website over there at MikeHagan.com. Just click over to the Music Archives section, and you can find information about all of these wonderful artists that share their music with us here on Radio Orbit, okay? All right, also, if you missed the program last week or any other for that matter, you can always catch them after the fact. They're on the web. Again, on the website, MikeHagan.com. You just have to click over to the program archives, and they're all there in MP3 format and podcasts and all that stuff. See what you think, and if there's anything in there that, you know, sparks your interest, download it, check it out, and share it with somebody else if you think they might like it too. All right? All right, tonight, Dr. Patty Taylor. We don't do this nearly enough, but tonight we'll take a stroll on the seamy side or the steamy side, I guess. Both, actually. Anyhow, sex on the docket for this evening. Patricia Taylor, Dr. Patty Taylor, is the leading teacher of expanded orgasm on the planet today, I think. So, anyway, we'll have Dr. Patty Taylor, and we'll talk about sex and love and how to make people feel good for the rest of the program tonight, okay? Here's, I've got, you know, I've got to get my mind and my mouth around the language of the program tonight. So I've been trying to come up with all these sexual metaphors and all this stuff. And, oh, God, now Will's here. Now we're really in deep trouble. But I'll play another song here in a few minutes. But I want to read you a little clip from Dr. Patty's blog that I pulled out this afternoon. This is just, you know, a random sample, but goes like this. How to give a great G-spot orgasm. What a fun and informative show. I've never met a woman who's had one great G-spot orgasm that didn't want 100 of them. Patty can tell you how to have them and even how they can lead to true female empowerment. So, how about it? Okay. Turn on or tune out, all right? So we'll do it in just a bit. Dr. Patty Taylor on the web if you want to get a head start. No pun intended. At www.expandedlovemaking.com. www.expandedlovemaking.com. You'll be able to get a feel for some of the things we might be talking about with Patty in a little while. Okay, I'll stop. Actually, I won't. It's going to be going on for another 2 hours and 45 minutes. So we'll hear a piece of music tonight from, or I should say we'll hear music throughout the night tonight from a gentleman who goes by the name of Johnny's Cousin Steve. Actually, a thread ties me to this guy back in Colorado, and I wanted to share his music with y'all. He's an old friend of Ashley's, and he's written some fun, cool music, I think making his way in New Jersey these days, playing out on the shore. But tonight we'll have Johnny's Cousin Steve. We started things off with a song that was called An Afternoon Alone, and this one is, let's see, I think Shakin' Jenny Bacon will play. All right, it's Mike, you're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Once again, Johnny's Cousin Steve, this is Shakin' Jenny Bacon. At a party, all alone. Bacon, Jenny Bacon, on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. You listen to it here. It's about 20 after 11 or so on the, what's the date, the 14th now of January, halfway through the first month of the year 2008, and it's a pleasure to be here. KOPN Columbia is now podcasting local talk programming, including this one, on the web. If you missed a program or want to enjoy listening to a variety of shows at your leisure, log on to KOPN.org and click on podcasts. KOPN's local talk programs give voice to the Mid-Missouri community on a rich variety of subjects from our own backyard to the world beyond. And certainly the world beyond is one of the things that we touch often enough on this program. Local talk on the web, okay? KOPN.org. It's Mike to listen to it. Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And that was Johnny's cousin Steve, Shakin' Jenny Bacon. We'll hear more from Steve throughout the program tonight, okay? Hello to everyone listening this evening on KOPN, over the traditional airwaves, or over the web, internet, live or otherwise. Every Monday we do the show from the wonderful studios here at KOPN in lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri. Stream the show live as well on the web, kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button. Wonderful 64K stream for everyone with a decent internet connection. You can hear this program and KOPN round the clock on the web anywhere on the planet. All right, speaking of the internet, thanks to Larry Noriger, the web wizard, my brother. Big thank you to Larry for everything he does to help me out on the website. Thanks as well to all the people out there sending art, music, poetry, literature. Got a wonderful short story today. Lots of catching up to do, but we're going to do our best this year to improve the website and get more of this stuff up there and these things out there for people to see and people to share, all right? We'll find a place for it on the website if we can do it, okay? So if you got a way that you want to do your art, well, do it and then send it to me, and I'll try to find a way to share it with other people, okay? All right, on the web, www.mikehagan.com. Take a look, see over there. Let me know what you think, all right? Just flip your mouse right over there, and you'll have access to everything we're doing. Please share your thoughts. Everyone likes to know what you think, including the guests and the musicians that are on the program, all right? We also have a forum bulletin board that's always busy and bubbling with interesting topics and ideas being discussed and debated, more than I can ever keep up with, but certainly ones that I'm very interested in and that I do participate in. There's a live chat room that's up and active right now and always available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thanks, as usual, to Chaos for putting that whole thing together for me. I love it. Thanks so much, brother. We'll peek in there through the night and get questions and comments from y'all if you're in there and listen to the program, okay? I always encourage my guests as well as listeners to join me there in the chat room and in the forum. It's a great way to get to know the people that are interested in some of the things that you are, too. All right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T radio, orbitradio@AOL.com. Send me email. Guests on the program as well, musicians, they love to hear from you. On the web, mikehagan.com. Phone number here in the studio, 874-5676. That's area code 573-574-5676. If you want to just say hi during a break or something, that's the line to call. You will not be on the air if you call that number, though, okay? If we take calls with Dr. Patty Taylor later, the number to write down and to keep in mind is area code 573-443-8255. That's the call-in line if you want to get on the air and actually talk with me and with Patty, okay? All right, a couple things about upcoming guests, and then we'll do some space weather and a couple other things I want to mention, all right? I mentioned, Jonathan Zapp last week. Thanks to John for being on the program. Tonight, Patty Taylor, Dr. Patty Taylor, will talk about sex. Next week, on the 21st, Michael and Star, Dr. Michael Heisen and Star Newland will talk dolphin talk, whale talk, cetacea, intelligence, communication, space travel, you name it. On the 28th of January, Russell Means, the Lakota, what's going on up in Lakota country, the Lakota Nation, as I mentioned last week, back in December, sort of shook the world, even though very few people heard what happened. Much of this is still coming to light, and more people are learning about it, but certainly it's not something that you're going to see on CNN, because it's a frightening thing for that type of a organization. But the Lakota, essentially, officially, walked away from all the treaties that they've signed with the United States government over the last 160 years and are attempting to regain sovereignty as, you know, a sovereign nation that will exist in the middle of this one. So anyway, Russell Means, for people familiar with this topic, Russell's one of the guys. He's been heavily involved in the politics and, you know, social activism for the Lakota people for nearly 70 years. He's 68 years old, and I think he probably began working for his people, you know, when he was a young man. So, at any rate, Russell Means. Very excited to have Russell Means on the program on the 28th of January. There's a whole lot of talk going on. There's a whole lot of controversy. There's a whole lot of people, you know, as always, coming up with this, that, and the other thing. So we'll talk to Russell Means and try to clarify what's actually happening with the Lakota. All right. On the 4th, I'm trying to have Boyd Graves back of February. It's been 6 months since we talked about the AIDS-HIV thing, all right? On the 4th of February, Boyd Graves. Graham Hancock back on the program, hopefully sometime in the next month or two. David Abram. I had a couple of email conversations with David, but I'm not sure if that's going to work out. Glenn Kimball, and lots more in the wing, okay? All right, what time is it? 25 minutes after, okay. Announcements. James Joyce. The passing of James Joyce over to the ancestors occurred in 1941 on the 13th of January. So what's it now? 2008, 67 years and one day. James Joyce, the Irish writer, considered one of the most profound and important writers of the 20th century, responsible for the epic Ulysses and, of course, Finnegan's Wake. Most of what I learned about Joyce, I learned from Joseph Campbell. And, of course, Joe Campbell was a brilliant scholar, a professor at Sarah Lawrence University for many, many years, but someone who knew and understood the work of Joyce better than nearly anyone, I think, and he wrote and spoke of James Joyce often. But anyway, not easy reading for sure. Finnegan's Wake, for example, if you pick that one up, it's like a dive into, you know, the unknown. The language is just unintelligible at first. He would use these complicated symbolic lines, you know, parallel lines that he would draw from. I mean, he was brilliant. He knew mythology, history, literature, and he would grab all of these different little parallels and was a brilliant linguist. And he actually created sort of his own language of invented, you know, puns and allusions and different words, but there's a payoff if you persevere. If you read Finnegan's Wake, the first 30 or 40 pages, literally you won't know what you're reading, but it sort of osmotically gets into your brain or your mind or your heart or something, and by the time page 50 rolls around, you actually understand what the hell he's talking about. And he creates this. It's like a psychedelic experience, actually. If you could put, you know, 500 micrograms of LSD into 500 printed pages, that's what Finnegan's Wake is. And it's an amazing work, if nothing else, of literature. So, at any rate, one of our ancestors, for sure, and a literary extraordinaire, James Joyce. Here's to you, my friend. One other one, Kurt Gödel. On the 14th of January, 1978. Kurt Gödel, the Austrian mathematician, writer, philosopher, a scientist who concentrated on logic problems and was extremely gifted. His work had an enormous effect on scientific and philosophical schools ever since, primarily because of his incompleteness theorems. That goes today by the name of Gödel's incompleteness theorem. There are actually two of them, and they appeared in I mentioned Alfred North Whitehead last week, actually. And Whitehead and Bertrand Russell in the early 1930s put together this amazing work of mathematics and philosophy called Principia Mathematica. And Kurt Gödel's work, the incompleteness theorem, is included in Principia Mathematica, which was, of course, like I said, you know, Bertrand Russell and Alfred North Whitehead, who put that amazing thing together back in the 1930s. So why was Gödel important? Well, his work isn't paid much mind these days, but it is a big deal because what it really did was change the way truth was observed and defined throughout the end of the 20th century and into today, because essentially what Godel showed was that there were no ultimate closures in efforts to describe systems. In other words, things could pop up in a system, and it didn't matter what sort of a system. It could be a chemical system, biological system, a social system, a planetary system. But what the incompleteness theorem showed was that there was no closure in any of these systems, and that things could pop up that were never predicted by the rules of the system itself. So you can be in the middle of a situation, and this is very much the way I think we are actually, but you can be in the middle of a situation that's defined by a certain set of rules, but things can happen in the middle of that that are not predicted by the rules. And when that happens, well, that's when you have paradigm shifts and this sort of thing, right? People like Ilya Prigozhin and Eric Jansch, and others, you know, eventually were able to show this in the laboratory using chemistry. They could show that higher orders of complexity, higher orders of sophistication could unpredictably and spontaneously be generated from lower states of order. I mean, this is the big deal, you guys. And, you know, eventually that became chaos theory and all that. So, anyway, a lot of it seems like what happens to us. You know, the human monkey is in essentially a similar situation. It's what evolution is. You know, the idea that in a state of perceived order, things just sort of going along as they always do, right? That something can happen and change the whole nature of the business. So, anyway, Kurt Godel, 30 years ago today, he passed over to the ancestors. Here's to him, aho, all right? All right, space weather. Lots going on. The solar cycle, number 24, began about a month ago. There's been quite a lot of aurora activity ever since the beginning of the year. Right now, if you look right at the sun, if you have the right filter, it might look blank, but if you look at the edges, you'll find it's just absolutely alive. There are amazing photographs of prominences that are blasting off of the western limb right now, but that means, unfortunately, that it's about to rotate out of our view. So if you have time, you got probably 12 hours left or so. And if you have a solar telescope, you can check it out before it disappears. 2008, as I said, has been a great year for Aurora Borealis already, if you're up there in the northern hemispheres. Certainly over the Arctic realm, every night so far for the last 14 days, all year, there's been spectacular northern light occurrences. So northerners of all species should be alert for more aurora borealis tonight, right, and tomorrow. There's a solar wind stream. That's, of course, what causes this sort of thing. That's blowing against the Earth's magnetic field right now and causing amazing storms, I imagine, right now over Alaska, Russia, Canada, Scandinavia. And if you've got a camera or a pair of binoculars, I'm sure it'd be something that you enjoy at least for a little while, right? Okay, what else is happening up there in the stars above our heads? Ulysses. Speaking of James Joyce, there is a probe, a solar satellite that was launched from Earth a couple of years ago. It's called Ulysses, and it circles the sun, and it gathers information and data about the star that provides all the light and warmth for our planet here. It's called Ulysses, and it will reach its furthest north latitude relative to the sun today. That's about 80 degrees up there to the northern pole of the sun that it's looking at right now. And if we had access to all the data that's coming from Ulysses, I'm sure that many of us would find it very interesting. What else is happening here? The 14th through the 16th, get this, the first meeting of the International Primitive Body Exploration Working Group in Okinawa, Japan. I don't know what the hell that means, but it said body exploration. And that's sort of what we're going to be doing on the program tonight, so I thought I would mention it. The 15th of January, Cassini, flying by Methoni and Pandora, two moons of Saturn, of course. January 15th again, Comet C, 2005 McNaught, will reach perihelion. That means it gets as close to the sun as it will ever get. On the 16th, another comet, T6 Catalina, will reach its closest approach to our planet. That's about 1.6 astronomical units. One AU, as they're identified, is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. So an astronomical unit is 93 plus or minus million miles. So when they say something came 1 AU within the bounds of our planet, you know, it was, you know, essentially the same distance away from us as the Sun is. So this is about that plus a half. At any rate, comets and asteroids always zipping around. People don't really realize that we sort of live in the middle of a pinball game, and there's always things moving through our system and bumping into other things and cosmic interlopers of all kinds of different variety, but we seem to avoid most of the peril. Every once in a while, though, you know, you get whacked by the flipper, you know, and then, you know, nothing bigger than a chicken walks out of it, and then the whole thing sort of starts over. But at any rate, lots of stuff always happening up there in the stars above your heads. Take a look up sometimes. I think people would be amazed at what they see if they just look up more often. Me and Will, my friend Will, who's actually sitting here with me, and one of the other guys at the bar before we came here, we were talking about linguistic limitations and how we talk in two-dimensional terms, even when we're living in a three-dimensional world and this sort of thing, or a four-dimensional world, or five, or who knows how many. But many of the metaphors we use for direction and this sort of stuff are actually two-dimensionally described, but we actually are trying to apply them in a three-dimensional world. And this is exactly what's happening when we walk around. Very few people actually look up. They tend to look before them, behind them, to their left and to their right, you know, and look down, I guess, if they're walking on a field of rocks to make sure they don't stumble. But for the most part, they're interested in those four directions that are the flat plane that sort of emanates from, you know, from them wherever they are. And, you know, the Earth is round, or it's a globe, but it is big. And so as an individual walking on it, yeah, it appears two-dimensional. I mean, we appear to be walking on flat surfaces, you know. When you walk across your living room floor, it is flat for all practical purposes. I mean, my God, the Giza Plateau is flat to a quarter of an inch accuracy over the course of how many thousands of meters? I mean, so in a practical application, it's true. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, we do not live on flat surfaces, and the Earth is round, and we live on a sphere. We assume the outside of a sphere, and things are outward from where we are, and we have a tendency to not look up or down when we're, you know, operating in that two-dimensional realm. So look up, and, you know, you never know what you'll find. All right, what else is happening up there? Speaking of looking up, the moon tomorrow, today essentially, 20 minutes from now, but tomorrow night, the moon will pass about 20 degrees north of a star called Mira in the constellation Cetus, which is the whale. And Mira is what they call a variable star. And she changes brightness over a period of 330 days or so. And Mira is just now peaking in brightness. And I think now about fourth magnitude, sort of a dim star, but still easily seen with the naked eye. When Mira is on the dim side of her cycle, a telescope is required to see her. So anyway, tonight, Mira, brightening up, and I love it. You can compare brightness any time of the year. Now, Mira is also a name that's been brought to my attention over the last couple of months, which is just another one of these rabbit hole stories. But there's a woman, and I don't even know what her last name was, but she went by the Mother, and she was hanging out with Sri Aurobindo and, you know, some of these Hindu guru types back in the 50s and 60s. But she was a woman who wrote until the age of about 90 years old, and I've been reading some of the things that she wrote, and it's just remarkable. And I mean, I can't even really verbalize much of it. So just if you're interested, go to Google and put in M-I-R-R-A, Mira, M-I-R-R-A, and the word mother, and then the word agenda. I think those three probably will get you where you want to go. And I'd love to hear some comments on what you people think about what this woman was writing 50, 60 years ago. Anyway, okay, tomorrow night, the 16th, I take that back, Wednesday night, the 16th. If you measure degrees across the sky, first of all, the most convenient ruler is to sort of just hold your hand up and make a fist. If you hold your fist at arm's length, the typical person, grown adult, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're 6 foot tall or 5'9 or whatever, for the most part, it will cover about 10 degrees of the sky. So on the 16th of January, Wednesday, the moon will be about 40 degrees or about four fists from the planet Mars. Jupiter and Venus will be in the morning sky, will be about 15 degrees or about a fist and a half from each other. And the bowl of the Big Dipper will be about, about 5 degrees, about a half of a fist from the moon. And anyway, just about a finger or so. All right, that's that for now. Let's play another piece of music here from Johnny's cousin Steve. And then we'll come back. Got a couple things in the news to talk about. And we'll have Patty Taylor, Dr. Patty Taylor, with us in about 15 or 20 minutes, okay, right around the top of the hour. Okay, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Oh, yeah, I want to hear this one. I think this is my favorite track on the CD. Johnny's Cousin Steve, by the way, on the web. Go to myspace.com/Johnny's Cousin Steve. And I'm not sure if he has a website, you know, directly to his stuff. If he does, I bet it's johnnyscousinsteve.com. It's just a guess. But anyway, I know he has the MySpace thing, and there's some songs up there that you can check out and download if you like. But at any rate, here he is, Steve. I don't even know his last name. I've known the guy for a long time. He introduced me in a weird way to my wife. So this is Ode to Underdog. Appropriate, I guess. That's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN, Columbia.
Where, oh, where has my underdog gone? Oh, where? He gone.
This birthday party makes a perfect day. Unless I'm crying, I'm gonna call me away. But I've got a feeling this could be a trick. To rescue Polly, I must be quick. There's no need to fear. 'Cause underdog, underdog is here. secret place in my ring I fill with an underdog energy vitamin pill.
In Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's another one from Johnny's cousin Steve. And you're listening to it here on Radio Orbit. That was called Ode to Underdog. I love it. Great stuff. Thanks, Steve, for making this stuff available for us, okay? All right. It is about 10, 12 minutes or so before the hour of midnight here in mid-Missouri. And it's a pleasure to be with y'all. A couple things in the news here before we play one more and then have Dr. Patty Taylor with us at the top of the hour, okay? Surviving eagles recovering from dive into fishy mess. Now, those of you who know me, I'm all about birds, right? Especially these raptor birds. Owls, hawks, eagles. You know, I can't get away from them, and I can't get enough of them. It's a very weird thing, but at any rate, listen to this. A very weird story. Most of the 30 bald eagles, this is from Anchorage, Alaska, all right? Most of the 30 bald eagles that survived a disastrous dive into a truck filled with fish guts are close to recovery, said officials at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. They said two birds have died, but most of the rest have perked up and may soon be released. Another 20 eagles died after the birds mobbed the uncovered truck at Ocean Beauty Seafoods on Friday. Now, this is a weird story, all right? I mean, if you do the math here, basically what happened was there were 50, plus or minus, eagles. 50 eagles that all attacked a fish truck at the same time, and 20 of the eagles died. Now, I don't know what the hell is going on, but that ain't normal. Eagles and hawks and owls, first of all, they don't hang out together. They do stuff alone for the most part. You see a couple hawks together, that's the most you'll ever see. You know? 50 eagles. I mean, these aren't starlings, you know? Anyway, I don't know what it is, but I thought that was a story that deserved discussing. All right? I don't know. Make of it what you will. It's up on my forum if you want to read more about it or comment on it, okay? One more thing. A listener comments, the singularity, and this is a quote from Ray Kurzweil, most of you who listen to the program will know who he is, the singularity will represent the culmination of the merger of our biological thinking and existence with our technology, resulting in a world that is still human but that transcends our biological roots. There will be no distinction post-singularity between human and machine or between physical and virtual reality. If you wonder what will remain unequivocally human in such a world, it's simply this quality. Ours is the species that inherently seeks to extend its physical and mental reach beyond current limitations. Our technology will match and then vastly exceed the refinement and suppleness of what we regard as the best of human traits. Ray Kurzweil. One of my friends, Ian, and a listener to this program, says, how do my fellow orbiteers feel about this? Well, I don't feel that way, actually. I mean, Ray's sort of on the edge of the technological side of this thing, and he's a brilliant guy, I think so, and he has the inventions and patents and all that stuff to show that he's been very successful in not only understanding, but utilizing, implementing, and marketing, you know, technological gadgets. And he's also been very forward-thinking in the way that he believed technological advancements would move forward, how they would advance, and the idea that it would happen faster and faster, which is eventually what became, you know, one of the centerpieces of his, you know, his shtick, and this is the singularity. But he wasn't the first one to come up with that. You know, Werner Vinge, of course, I think originated the idea, but there were people before him, and, you know, in a mystical sense, in a religious sense, there are people that have been talking about singularities, you know, forever. The idea that, you know, Kurt Gödel, we spoke about Kurt Gödel during the first hour of the program, the author of the incompleteness theorems that were immortalized in Alfred North Whitehead and Bertrand Russell's Principia Mathematica. But what Gödel showed in a mathematical sense, what Gödel proved mathematically through logic, was that small perturbations to enormous systems that were improbable and not predictable by the rules of that system could arise and completely flip that system on its lid. And that's what a singularity is. It's something that you can't predict. It's something that none of your theories expect. And it's something that arises without anyone expecting it. You know, it's improbable to the max. It makes no sense to no one. That's why no one ever imagines that it would happen, because it's beyond the scope of the thought of the day. Well, you know, doesn't matter whether you can cognize it or not, the thing still happens, right? Now, Ray is on the technological side of this thing for the most part, but I actually believe that there's a spiritual side of it too. And I don't think this is a part of it that they're taking into account in science and on the gadgetry side of the whole thing. Because, frankly, nothing happens without the consent of the spirit, in my world at least. You know, I mean, anything is possible, but it's possible only with the consent of the Creator. Nothing happens that is not consented by the he, she, it, what that kickstarted this whole thing. And my experiences show me that the Creator can do anything that it wants. So the idea that men or monkeys or anything else are in control of the thing is a, you know, it's a nice thought, and it makes everyone feel nice and comfortable and all that, but it's not at all the truth of the matter. Kurt Gödel showed it on paper. History shows it over and over again. Ray Kurzweil's considering it, but I think that he's missing what science has always missed, you know, spirit. And Kurzweil thinks it's going to happen 50 years from now. You know, he says, he says 40 years, 45 years away. I mean, I'm thinking 45 days. It could be 45 minutes for all I know, you know. But I think that anyone that's talking 50 years in the future is still way out of the ballpark. 50 years? Come on. Can anyone imagine 50 months from now? You couldn't have 50 months ago. There was no YouTube and a whole bunch of other stuff. So forget it. I mean, no one knows what's coming. We are on, you know, the proverbial runaway train on a dark and stormy night. Or maybe just a dark night. Or maybe broad daylight. But the thing is barreling away, and nobody knows where it's going to end up, how it's going to end up. Maybe it'll pull right into a station and just, you know, it'll be right where we want to end up. You don't know about that. You know, nobody knows the future, whether they say they do or not. If they do, head for the door. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll play another song here from Johnny's cousin Steve, and then we'll talk to Patty Taylor in just a few minutes. Dr. Patty Taylor, I'll tell you more about her in just a minute, all right? Okay, it is just a few minutes before midnight, and this is, what song should we play here? I think we'll start with the title track. This is called Holding On Forever. It's Mike, you listen to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, it's Radio Orbit.
Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right. You are listening to Radio Orbit. It is Mike Hagan. It's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's straight up midnight. Our guest for the rest of the program tonight is Dr. Patricia Taylor. She's the leading teacher of expanded orgasm in the world today. Her studies in this field extend over 20 years. She makes regular media appearances, such as this one. She has a couple of books, has a full-length sex education video, and has led countless classes and play shops. Her work has touched the hearts and minds, bodies and spirits of tens of thousands of erotic consciousness explorers, and tonight she will touch some of us. So let's say hello and good evening to Patty Taylor. Welcome to Radio Orbit. Patty, how are you?
Hey, Mike. I'm just great. And hi, all you listeners out there. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you on the program, Patty. All right. This is sort of a first for us on Radio Orbit. I mean, I've had women on the program all the time. This topic that we're going to talk about tonight, sex and orgasm and love, and I'm sure lots of other things combined within these things, I've never done it before. So, first of all, I want to talk about you a little bit and give my listeners an idea of who we're talking to tonight and your background and how you got sort of on the path that brought you here tonight.
Okay, great. Well, let's see. I'll start out and say I never thought that I would be talking about orgasm. I'm going to start right out and say that. I have an MBA from Wharton. I was a money manager.
Oh,
Wharton
yeah.
is one of the
sure Wharton Business School, yeah.
best schools in the country. I was managing $100 million in a hedge fund, and I'll just sort of make this really short, but I think your listeners might appreciate this. 22 years ago, I was transferred out to California. I was working on Wall Street, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so managing money out here, and I met a man in sort of a long white robe and white beard, and he looked safe to take a hike with, and basically we went up into the mountains, and he gave me an initiation. I had no idea at the time.
Where were you at this time?
At Mount Harbin in California.
In California, okay.
I was transferred out here to run some mortgage funds. And
glad you're out of that business.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. And he looked at me at my request at some point during the experience. A lot happened, so I'm kind of condensing this. With a third eye, and a year and a half later, I began the process of a kundalini awakening. I had no idea what was going on for 3 years afterwards, but it was so intense.
But did you know that it had happened at that time?
No. But we had a conversation at the moment that he looked into my eyes, and I looked, I saw, you know, obviously I saw the third eye. In fact, I was so flipped out when that happened. I asked him to do it a second time, and I, you know, studied it very carefully.
You mean you actually saw a third eye on this man?
Yes. And I was a Republican, and I was a very straight person.
Hey, there's a lot of third eyes in that gang, I think.
In what, the long...
In the, oh. I'm just joking. I'm
oh,
thinking
right.
Dick Cheney or something. I don't know.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, I don't know, but... This was not something that was in my normal,
No, of course. Not something you were expecting, yeah.
Right, or I wasn't going around kind of already doing this, okay? I was very straight, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I was shocked. And but I was a believer, too, at that point, okay?
Well, you see it and you believe it, I guess, right?
Well, I wouldn't have believed it if it didn't happen to me. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
And... And at that point, I said, you know, do you have a message for me?
All right.
And he said, yes. He said, and the message is, there is no message, except that everyone, you were born free with a one-way ticket to life on this planet. And you owe nothing to anyone. But to enjoy every second of this experience. And so we had this profound conversation, and a lot of other stuff happened, which I think is a little off topic, but I found out 3 years later when I got into Tantra and expanded orgasm, and that I had, someone said, and I said, oh no, I can't, you know, have psychedelics. They completely fry my brain, and I had this terrible virus. And someone said, well, tell me about this virus. And I explained what happened, and someone said, no, I don't think you had a virus. I think you had a Kundalini awakening. And sure enough, I looked it up, and it was a Kundalini awakening. And so they said, well, you really ought to try having an expanded orgasm. I think you'd love one. And
could you tell me a little bit about the Kundalini experience, what that's like for people who aren't familiar?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's related to orgasm, I imagine.
Absolutely. Well, it took about 6 weeks. It started out as a pain in my foot. I thought I stepped on a rock. I was running in Central Park as I'd gone back to visit my sort of this friend. And all of a sudden I started limping. And the pain kind of went up my leg. And then it was like this fire in my genitals. And anyway, it was like this all this neurological burning. And it was like snake bites and sizzling and stabbing and just the most insane, intense, crazy stuff going on. And I went to like every kind of doctor, and don't forget, I'm like really straight and I have no idea what's going on. And it stayed sort of in my genital area for like a few weeks. I got tested for everything, and then it started going up my back. And then I thought I had like herpes or something, which, you know, I got checked out. I did. And then it went up my back. And then I thought, oh my God, I've got something even worse. And it woke me up in the middle of the night. I felt like I was being electrocuted. It was in my spine. And it finally went up. This is the awakening. It went up the back of my head. And I knew I was going to die. So I was having like, I just absolutely knew I was going to die, these weird things would happen. My arms would fall asleep. My lymph nodes were totally swollen. Just horrible stuff. I was totally depressed. At the moment before I left my body, I just knew it was over, and I saw my entire person leave my body, and I had a life review, just classic near-death experience. My life, it was a horrible, terrible, tragic life review. It was like my whole life was a complete waste, and it was squandered and over, and it was like I was totally inauthentic, complete waste of time. Don't forget, I worked on Wall Street.
Right,
I'd done
the right
thing in life. It was totally meaningless, totally wasted. It was very painful. It really was just a really frightening, scary thing.
But from a material standpoint, too, you were successful and you had money, I imagine, and
absolutely.
You were in good shape and all.
Oh, yeah. I was a trader. I traded everything, every commodity, foreign exchange, bonds. Everything but aluminum at that time, you know, but I saw my whole being leave my body, and I got down to a place of unconditional love, and all of a sudden I said, that's the one thing that hasn't poisoned me, and I thought all of me was going to leave, and that was the one thing that didn't leave, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be leaving, and this isn't leaving, and there was a sort of shift, and all of a sudden I thought, that doesn't hurt me, the unconditional love, and all of a sudden I went into this light, and there was this kind of this light, like this bliss that was indescribable. It was so orgasmic that it's like, you know, it was the white light thing, or it was bluish white, but I went into it. I was like this sense of unconditional love, and I went into this light, and I think that's when the Kundalini passed through my crown chakra, and it was really just indescribable. I don't know how long I was there, although I have talked to my the entity that I communicate with that says, apparently, I think I was there for 3 hours, but I have no idea. You know, you leave time.
Yeah, time is not even,
Right, I have no idea. But when, but I came back, much to my surprise. Then the energy came down the front of my being and landed in my abdomen. It then proceeded, this energy, to circulate in my body nonstop for about 9 months before it even stopped for 5 minutes.
Tell me how it felt.
Well, it was very, very painful and scary and excruciating and terrifying. I had no idea what it was.
Could you feel a movement, though, like this rotation that you're talking about?
Absolutely. It would go up from my feet and up through the back of my head and down through the front. And into, it was classic. It's a classic Kundalini awakening, full body, and then, you know, down and out through my arms. And I had a lot of symptoms, like I couldn't walk. There were places on my feet. I couldn't wear certain kinds of shoes because I had just sore spots on my feet. I couldn't wear underwear because my lymph nodes were so swollen. It only stopped after 5 minutes after 9 months. And it sort of damped down and tapered off after a few years. So it was very, very intense for me.
Wow.
And I had no idea what it was.
Huh.
And it was very intense, obviously, this meeting with this man. And we did sort of, it was a very intense meeting. Anyway, that was my Kundalini awakening.
Did you ever see him again?
No, you know, I kind of wish I did. And I sort of have thought often, who was this man?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I often wonder if he was more than just a, you know, average person.
Well, he had a third eye.
Yeah, right. And, so obviously it was pretty unusual experience.
All right, so from there, you're still in the money business. So
I left it after about. Well, what happened is when I came back, I knew I had been born again, and it wasn't clear until a few years later that I was a different person completely. You know, that I came back as a walk-in, but that part wasn't clear. But I knew I had been born again. I knew I had had a near-death experience, even as the straight person. That I was starting out. My register was at zero. I was just a different person. My heart was wide open. Mm-hmm. I loved everyone. I could see with sort of X-ray vision. I could just see into people's energy. I saw how beautiful everyone was.
Did it include a sort of abandonment of principles or ideas that you thought were sort of sacred? I mean, mathematics of this set or something, or maybe you were a scientific person or a religious person. I mean, did it make you readjust your ideological paradigm? Or was it more just an experiential thing?
All I can say is I think I was just a different person. I left behind, I didn't have any emotional connection to my past. I was just a different person. I was like born again, you know. I vowed when I came back, the first thing I thought when I came back, honestly, was, oh my God, I'm here, and gee, I never want to go through another life review like that again. That was really the first thing I thought of. Is that was like the most horrifying thing I've ever seen, because I was all alone, and that was, you know, the most recent thing that had happened to me. And if I don't know how much longer I have, I don't know if I have another one coming in 5 minutes or 5 years. But all I know is I want to live every moment of my life as richly as I can in every moment. And if I'll make a deal with myself, if I live every moment as fully as I can, then the next time, so that my next life review is really good,
right,
then I'll go quietly and enjoy. I won't complain. That's all I want to do, is have a good review the next time. And it's all I want. I swear to God, you know, it's all
well,
I could think about.
That's an amazing story, but it's not that uncommon. But, you know, the way it happens to people is always different. In other words, the rebirth metaphor is one that can happen through a deep psychedelic experience, you know, through plants, or it can happen through a heartbreak. I mean, it can happen through, you know, ordeal in the wilderness, a heartbreak. It can happen through, you know, a Kundalini awakening or whatever. But it's amazing that people report similarly, you know, that it's literally a rebirth, a new person. And then all of a sudden it becomes like, well, now that you know somebody is watching or something or whatever it is, you know, that, I mean, something gave you the review, you know. And so now that you know that the review is coming or possible again, well, it makes you re-enter the play with a different sort of perspective.
It changed everything. It changed everything for me.
So what'd you do? What was the next thing?
Well, I'm going to fast forward to about 3 years later.
Again, time frame. Give us an idea for the year.
Okay, so it was 1985 when that happened.
So around
and all
years.
I can say is right afterwards, the big shift is I was really popular for the first time in my life because I loved everybody, you know?
Right.
And that was really nice because I'd always been a little stuck up or scared of people, and suddenly I just loved everyone and everyone loved me. It was a really beautiful thing. So 3 years later, I got into Tantra, and 3 years later someone said, hey, how would you like to have an extended orgasm? That's what they called it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you'd really like that. And I said, okay, sure, I'd love it. And so I was very unselfconscious of my body. I was, you know, 3 years old, literally.
Mm-hmm.
This guy who was trained in from Moore University, where they trained in giving and receiving extended orgasms.
Well, of course, at Moore University. What else, right?
Right, right. Well, yes. And so I got on this bed where this guy who's highly, highly trained gave me my first expanded orgasm. And within 20 minutes, I was breathing this fire, this intense sensation through my entire body, and just this feeling like up and in through my entire body and out through my fingers and toes and head. And I got so incredibly high, and I got into such an amazing altered state that I realized, I said, oh my God, I have gone back into the light. Now, it wasn't as intense as when I had my near-death experience, but it was the same kind of light, you know, that mm-hmm. same mm-hmm. full being bliss. And that's when I dedicated my life. I thought, oh, my God, if I can have this, it's in my own body, it's free, it's legal, I can have it on tap,
mm-hmm.
and why not? So that's when, you know, yeah, it's sex, and, you know, being an ex, you know, straight person, I'm going to have to, like, get over it and, like, learn how to do this, but, and that wasn't all that easy, but I have, and, because there aren't that many teachers of this, now I'm one, fortunately, but I have, and, you know what, it is, it's free, it's legal, and there are profound implications to being able to have access to this kind of transformational and transcendent bliss.
Wow. Well, it's a couple things come to mind. First of all, the fact that it's free and it's legal is only because, you know, they've been able to outlaw everything else, essentially. But because this is a personal, private matter and they haven't quite gotten, you know, into our bedrooms yet, they can't make this illegal, but they can make it uncomfortable. And that's what they've done with sex, is to, well, if we can't make it illegal and if we can't stop people from doing it, what we can do is make them, you know, we'll set up a situation where they feel very uncomfortable about it, and then they'll do it as little as possible. And when they do it, they won't do it right or they won't do it well, perhaps. But before we go any further, I want to do a couple of things with regard to definitions. You've already mentioned Tantra a couple times. There may be listeners who don't know what that is. So would you please give us a definition or at least a little bit of a description of what Tantra is and why you got involved in this after your Kundalini experience?
Well, sure. Well, Tantra is a sort of a set of practices that's pretty broad that are all designed to help you reach the divine. and to reach transcendent states of consciousness. And there's white tantra, which is basically not sexual, which might include chanting or meditation or staring at a candle or, you know, just different things like that, or just standing there with your arm in the air for 12 years or, you know, there's all kinds of sane and insane things that you might do as a tantric practice.
Right.
Let's see, then there's pink tantra, which might be, you know, kissing as a form of enlightenment, which is totally possible. And then there's, you know, kind of red tantra, which would be the very sexual practices, of which I think expanded orgasm would be a phenomenal example, where you can use an orgasm as a path to enlightenment. And it's a phenomenal path to enlightenment because you're using all of your body, mind, heart, and spirit. You're fully engaged. So in meditation, it's like you're dropping everything, you know, and you're sort of going into that nothingness to go into the everything. And in expanded orgasm, you're sort of going to the opposite. Mm. You're engaging your whole being.
Right, right. I kind of like, just off the cuff, I kind of like that one better, only because, well, the meditational thing is trying to get away from the body, essentially. You know, to leave the material behind, and this and what you're describing is to go right to the body, into the body, and let the body do everything that it's capable of doing.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about tantra is it's a very inclusive set of practices, and it's never an either or. So they'll say, hey, you know, try everything, whatever works for you. Mm. So, you know, and some things work better for some people and some things work better for other people. I find for me, it's very hard for me to drop my mind. And so what's beautiful for me about expanded orgasm is that you do get to harness your mind. And actually what's true, actually, is that when you are what we call fully engaged, There are different levels of mind, and there's one level that's called ego mind, and that kind of drops out when you're really in the expanded orgasmic state, and you sort of rise to another level called the witness mind that kind of wraps together the body, the observer mind, and the heart and the spirit are all totally engaged, and then you go into your witness mind. And it's quite an amazing thing. And so for me, it's actually, not only is it easier, but it's way more fun and pleasurable, and it's profound.
Mm-hmm. All right, look, it is about 25 after the hour. I want to take a couple more minutes before we go to a break, but I just want to let you know we'll have a break in just a few minutes here. So let's sort of wrap up this first segment with a last few thoughts, perhaps, about just the path itself. You eventually decided to leave the business world and all that stuff for good, and now you actually do this sort of stuff for a living. So something must have happened that actually pushed you even a little bit further.
I totally was a different person, and there was no way I could...
You couldn't go back to Wall Street, none of that.
You know, my position was fluctuating like $100,000 an hour, and I was embodying that, you know. I was not the person I was before. I just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I'm not sure why, but, I mean, I ask myself that now because it hasn't always been easy being a teacher of this. That's what I became, and I've developed this art to an incredibly deep level. To where I teach people how to go on journeys so that they can access their own genius. They can access the divine. They use their own body. And you're right. The government, the society. it does make it difficult for people to do this. And so it has been hard for me in some ways to say, what am I doing this for? But it's something that it seems like I've just, I don't know, had to do it is the right word, but it's just something that I've done. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the voice of the Kundalini speaking to me. I've wondered about that a lot.
Well, something happened for sure. So, all right, that's a good place to take a little break, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. Actually, Patty, give the website out before we go to break, okay?
Sure. My website is expandedlovemaking.com.
All right, expandedlovemaking.com. You can link there directly from my site as well, and this program will be up in the archives in the next couple of days. So we will return in just a few minutes with Dr. Patty Taylor. Once again, www.expandedlovemaking.com. And it is Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We will hear another piece of music here from Johnny's cousin Steve. This one is called Airport Angel. And then we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Dr. Patty Taylor, actually for the next hour and a half or so. So we have plenty of time to get into this stuff as deeply as we like. All right. By the way, on the web, the chat room, hello to everybody over there. And I appreciate the comments and questions. I'll be grabbing those. Even though I'm not chatting with you, I'm trying to pay attention to what you're talking about over there. And if you've got anything else you want to send me an email, I'll try to get there during one of these breaks, okay? All right, it's Mike. Once again, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Patty Taylor is our guest. We'll be back with her in just a few minutes. This is Johnny's cousin, Steve. Airport Angel. That's Johnny's cousin Steve. You're listening to it here on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And it is just now about, 1232 or 0132 hours in the AM now on the 15th of January, 2008. Pleasure to be with y'all here tonight. And it's great to have our guest, Patty Taylor, with us. And we'll get right back to her now and say hi. Hi, Patty.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for sticking around with us tonight.
Yes, good music.
Oh, well, yeah, it's a funny story, actually, but I won't get into it now. But actually, it turned out to be quite appropriate, actually. Okay, so before the break, we're talking about Tantra. And you told us a lot about your story, so thank you for letting people know how you got sort of into this particular situation, okay? Okay. Before we talk too much more about Tantra, I want to make it clear for people that certainly the sex part of it is a big thing. I mean, everybody's talking about sex, and everybody wants to have sex, and everybody's bent about sex and all kinds of stuff. But this isn't just about sex. This is a means toward something more than just a pleasurable end. In other words, there's a mystical side of it, this enlightenment business. The whole Kundalini thing is mysterious to begin with, and the fact that they're connected, I'm sure, will interest people. So could you talk a little bit more, you know, because we're going to get kind of deeply into this thing, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff, and the language we may be using may be, you know, sort of on the fringe of what people are used to hearing. But I wanted to realize it's not just, you know, not just for hedonistic purposes, that there's actually more to this.
Let's talk about that right away. I don't really think about what I'm doing as sex. But let me put it into perspective. There is a sexual element, and we are going to be talking, I think, fairly graphically, because you know what? You're using the body to reach states of enlightenment and to travel into other dimensions. How do you not talk about the body? But when people ask me, you know, what are you doing when you have an expanded orgasm, you know, are you having sex? What I say to them is, well, let's put it this way. If you went out to a restaurant and had a 16-course meal, would you go home and talk about the consommé? Or would you just tell them about the, you know, the chicken? No, you talk about the whole meal.
Right.
You know, the sex is just one aspect, and to just think of it in terms of sex would be incredibly limiting. I think about it in terms of the whole experience. You know, because to think about it in the sex would be sort of silly. It would be inaccurate. I mean, you're thinking, you know, it's the whole thing. It would be wrong. You wouldn't call a 16-course dinner consommé. You know, it just wouldn't make sense.
You know, when I, in a personal sense about sex and orgasm, I think about, we have this sort of a machinery that we have to use, like my penis, okay, right? For example. I have to use that in order to get to orgasm or whatever. But when I'm in the middle of an orgasm, I'm not thinking about the machinery that got me there, frankly.
Well, you know, there's another situation going on, too, which is that the same machine can be used for different things. Now, if you're having a quickie, that's one use. If you're having an orgasm because you want to procreate, that's another use. And then, you know, use number three, if you are using your penis because you want to enter into an altered state in order to reach trance. There's a number of uses, by the way, for an expanded orgasm. You may want to really go into a transcendent state. You may be wanting to train your body-mind matrix in order to train yourself how to function in a place where your body-mind system is collapsed into one, you know, unit. So to end all separation, so you learn how to function in a whole new way, and you may be wanting to just de-stress yourself and you know, you may want to really have a profound end of separation with your partner and start, you know, ending that sense of separation. I mean, there are many, many reasons why you'd enter into an expanded orgasmic state and use your genitals.
And this is something that applies to men too. It doesn't revolve strictly around the woman.
Oh, absolutely,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. And so we have to realize that there's tremendous conditioning around the ideas and the words that, as a part of the training to go into these states, we actually have to decondition ourselves around the use of the words. So that we can hear them in a way that serves us for traveling, serves us for pleasuring, serves us for using our bodies in a way that allows us to go, you know, use them for the purposes that we want, because we've all been conditioned against our conscious will, and so that's part of the process.
All right. Well, I think we should talk a little bit more about the cultural side of it, because we can certainly talk, and we will, about technique and, you know, the sort of physiology and the anatomy and all this, because I think that's important, too, because people are already asking, well, how the hell are you supposed to be doing this? But I think it's important for people to recognize how unnatural the state of sex is for a whole lot of people.
Okay. Do you want to spin that out for me a little bit more?
Well,
unnatural?
Well, I have a note here to talk about compatibility and chemistry and comfort level and the necessary requirements if you're going to have a partner to pull this off, right? In other words, there are few people, in my experience at least, that can get past the cultural, social stigmas and, you know, conditioning that puts them in a state that just never lets them let go enough in order to get to these places.
Okay, well, maybe what we ought to do is just start out and define an expanded orgasm, make sure that we're all on the same page.
Okay, yes, please.
Okay, great. So just on its own, I'm going to contrast it with what I call a regular orgasm. So, and there's nothing wrong with a regular orgasm, because God knows we wouldn't be here if there were, right?
Right, right.
Okay? Because millions of our ancestors had to have one in order for us to be here. And they all felt pretty good, presumably to somebody.
Right.
But a regular orgasm is just a series, technically, of contractions, you know, according to Masters and Johnson, spaced 8/10 of a second apart, and usually there's 4 or 5 of them, or maybe more, for the man. And there's usually an emission of ejaculation. That's for the man, and for the woman, the definition is a lot more varied. Okay, so it could either be that very same definition, or it could be basically, whenever it feels just really good down there, or just whenever she has the subjective experience of going over the edge, whether she has contractions or not, or so on or so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a regular orgasm. But you can imagine that there's sort of a mountain peak where you go up and over the edge and then down again.
Right, right.
A multiple orgasm is you go up and down and then kind of, maybe not all the way back down, but then up and then over again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in an expanded orgasm, you would kind of go up and over the edge, but you wouldn't go, well, this is an extended orgasm, you go up and over the edge, but instead of going down again, you'd stay over the edge, and you'd sort of keep contracting, and you just stay over that edge, and you just keep staying over that edge, and imagine that you just continue to contract, or you continue to feel sensation, not necessarily ejaculating if you were a man, but continuing to contract, or if you're a woman or a man, continuing to feel sensation at that level of intensity. And that state of feeling could go on for a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, an hour, depending on how long you had trained to feel that. So that's what's really amazing, because, you know, nature designed it that you would actually sort of poke through your normal state of existence. This is a moment where you're transcending ordinary sort of time,
huh?
Life. Yeah, you're creating new life in that moment when you're having that orgasm. You know, birth, death, orgasm, and giving birth are really those moments where you're in the life-death cycle. But when you can expand that moment.
Man, that's amazing. You know, in French, they call it the little death.
Right.
That's the orgasm, you know, the descriptive definition.
Yeah, you're opening a window into something that's profound. It's really outside of our normal waking daily conscious experience of reality. And when you can expand that orgasm and go on and on, it's like reality starts to change, and it can change quite dramatically. You're really kind of fucking with nature, and that's good, you know, because it's like you're getting a free lunch, you know. You're really playing around with stuff. You're taking what was, you know, meant to be this little minute or two, you know, less than a minute, and now you're turning it into an hour, and you're opening a window into the heavens. It's really cool.
Now, when in that state, in other words, so the idea is to be conscious in the state, perhaps, and then you have an extended period of time there, and so you can actually do stuff?
Absolutely. Now, notice I haven't mentioned whether you're with a partner or not, because this is something that can be done whether you're alone or with somebody.
Okay, I just got another check mark on my list. It says, can it be done alone here?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's why I said let's start with the definition. Yes, this is, you know, we're starting with this definition.
Right, but you still have to bring yourself to orgasm in any way, shape, or form that you like. In other words, you have to masturbate or you have to do something.
Well, yeah, you know. First of all, I want to say that I did, my PhD thesis was on expanded orgasm as a pathway to the transcendence of consciousness. And I did anecdotal interviews of 44 people who went into these states, 22 men and 22 women in the year 2000. And we studied them, I studied them, and did all sorts of statistical analyses across a wide range of things. How long did they go into these states? What did they do? You know... did they do them alone? Did they do them with a partner? So I'm talking from a kind of a background of having done a lot of research on these populations of people. So I just want to back up what I'm talking about with this research. Not only do I do it now and see clients and teach people, but I also did a lot of research on this. And so I do know that quite a bit about this. And anyway, so... You go into these states, and they last anywhere from, you know, 3 minutes on average to many, many hours.
Wow.
And you can do it on self-created, or you do it with a partner. You can experience this through having intercourse. You can give it to someone manually or through oral sex. So those are just some basic statistics. About how to do it and how it's done.
Is there a significant mental component, or is it something you can just flip somebody on whether they like it or not?
Well, that varies. Sometimes it just happens, okay? Sometimes people, I mean, it can happen spontaneously, and I'm guessing that a lot of the people that are in your chat room are going to say, God, yeah, I had that happen to me with a stranger. And it just happened one night, and I'm guessing that some of the people in your audience will say, yeah, wow, you know, I do this on my own, you know, I'll sit there for an hour and I'll do this when I'm masturbating, you know, when I'm away on a trip and no one, you know, knows about it.
Right.
And like men will often masturbate for a long time and take themselves into these states. And they'll separate orgasm from ejaculation and take themselves into these states. It's very common.
Not around my gang.
well, that's why we're having this show, because these are very possible things.
Uh-huh,
and in our household, I mean, there are many, many ways to do this, you know. And so that's why we're talking about it, you know, because, you know, it's mostly a matter of education.
Uh-huh.
My husband will usually stimulate me. Women like manual stimulation quite a bit. Mostly it's the mechanics.
Mm.
And men often like prefer intercourse. It's a generalization if they have the opportunity or preferences or things they really like a lot. Women often tend to like manual stimulation just because men can be much more dexterous with their fingers.
With their fingers, yeah.
They reach
different places and this sort of thing.
Right. But, of course, women can, you know, stimulate themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
you are in a long-term married relationship?
That's correct.
Do you mind me asking a question about your relationship?
Please go ahead.
Well, I mean, is how open is it?
It's open.
Explain what you mean by that.
I train with other people as part of my practice, and mm-hmm. I have to, you know, if I'm going to work with other people, then it's really important.
But you're not just giving advice. In other words, you're actually...
I've been open and practicing
yeah,
with other people
so.
For... Uh-huh. Pretty much the entire time of my marriage,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's part of my professional requirements. You know, there's no way I could work with other people if I didn't have a huge amount of experience.
I love it, and I'm not judging it at all.
Don't have to.
But I think it's interesting, and I think that people, one of the things that, well, I just think that there are more than one way. There are many ways to define relationships, and I think that people have such a difficulty on one hand getting through the sex blockades because they're so hung up on personal issues that come down to relationships and comfort levels and ownership issues and this sort of stuff. You know, in other words, people are oftentimes so uncomfortable in their own skin and insecure or whatever that they have a difficult time even imagining a relationship like you discuss.
Right. Well, we've been open pretty much since the beginning, and I don't know what else to say. My experience is that different people have preferences for different things, so I'm not sure if there's a right and a wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that different people, really, it works for them one way better than another. I think it's different temperaments. Some people like chocolate, some people like vanilla.
Hmm, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the work is actually in helping people to achieve these states, and you literally work directly with them. And I'm sure you teach other people how to work with others as well.
That's correct. And there is a very strong mental component. There is a physical component. You know, there's a lot to learn. For men, you probably... I mean, everybody has a lot to learn.
Sure,
and I'm
anything.
Sure you can ask me a lot as we go along about, you know, what there is to learn. Whether you're a man or whether you're a woman, it's different. What are your goals?
Mm-hmm,
would influence what you want to learn and whether there's an emotional component too and there's a lot of technique that's very, very important.
Right. I mean, I think that that sort of goes with many things. No matter how bad you'd like to do something you still got to know the mechanics of how to actually do it.
Yeah, so maybe tonight it'd be really nice if we could just send some of our listeners off with some, inspire them with some good ideas.
Yeah, I think that's a great strategy, actually. And I think what we'll do, we got a few more minutes here until the top of the hour, and then, so we'll plan to do that when we come back from our break. We'll take a couple more minutes right now to talk about some of the goals, perhaps. Like you just mentioned, people may have different agendas. We could probably talk a lot about it, but anyway, please talk a little bit about what, you know, what people are doing this for.
Yeah, I would love to do that, and I think that's an excellent question. You think like I do, you know. I love to start with the big picture. Well, let's see. I'll start with myself. I would say the reasons that I do it are I love to go into a trance. I absolutely love at the end of the day to just disappear, and I love to go into expanded orgasmic states because I love to access my creative, large mind, and I just become very visionary, and it helps me to integrate anything that's going on and to let go of anything. And I absolutely travel into other, like, dimensions. And sometimes I go so far out, it's like I don't even know where I go practically, and I come back, and it's like the most phenomenal experience, and the bonding and the connect, and it feels so amazing, and it's, I feel so connected, and it's such a turn on. And then I feel very sexy and turned on and ready to play. And, you know, the guys love that. And then I'm ready to give them an expanded orgasm. It's like such a win-win for me, you know, because I don't think of myself as like, I mean, I'd say most guys would say I'm pretty attractive, but I wouldn't say I'm like the most naturally sexy, turned on babe in the room, you know. I mean, I look at other women, I go, oh, well, they're more turned on than I am, you know. Yeah. I think I'm like normal, you know. Uh-huh. But boy, you give me an expanded orgasm and I'll just be like a tiger, you know. And I'm just like, you sit down here, I'm just going to take you to the moon, you know. And I'm just like, I do, I turn into a tiger, and suddenly, you know, like my guy is happy, and it's very connecting. And then I take them to the stars, and it's very good for our relationship. And I take their ride. So I get two rides. I get my ride, and I get their ride. And it's fun, you know. And then it's very de-stressing. So it's a way to just so mellow out. You shift your whole reality out of this. You know, it's like our world is going so fast with all the cell phones and Blackberries and this. You have to totally shift your consciousness into this altered dimension of getting so present. You have to go into like Zen. You have to go into this time and place of being so aware of every moment, of every stroke. It gets you to slow down into this ultra sensorium of feeling everything so exquisitely and deliciously, and you're just totally creative. So that's what I do it for. I think other people enjoy the turn on. I think the novelty, I think it really stimulates your brain. It's a very creative process. It keeps you young. I think it keeps the synapses in your brain growing. I think if you want your sex life to be growing fresh and alive and exciting rather than, I mean, it will make your sex life amazing, even though it's not about sex. If you, you know what I'm saying? You don't do it for the sex, but
right,
if you
right.
wanted it to help your sex life anyway,
mm-hmm.
obviously this would make you have be like the most phenomenal lover in the world. I mean, there's no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
You would be like, you know, I don't know how to put it in, you know. One hot piece of property with this type of training. There's no question about it.
Well, I'm sure that there are many men out there that listen that would love to hear more about how they might learn some of this stuff.
And plus, it's a way to really love yourself, you know, and really, like I said, it's free, it's legal,
right?
And to have your own transcendence, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, good place to take a little break, okay? All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Dr. Patty Taylor. You can find information about her and the work that she does, or the play that she does, on the web at www.expandedlovemaking.com. And you can link there directly from my site as well over there at MikeHagan.com, all right? Okay, we will play another piece of music here. We're just about 1 o'clock in the morning, got an hour left of the program, and an hour left with Dr. Patty Taylor. But we will take a little breather here, and if you need to, go get a bite to snack on or a little bit of something to eat or maybe something else, if you know what I mean. So anyway, it'll have to be quick. We got 2 minutes and 53 seconds. We'll be back after this. It's called Cayman Flower, Johnny's Cousin Steve, once again on the web at myspace.com/Johnny's Cousin Steve. It's Mike. This is Radio Orbit. Patty Taylor back in just a few minutes. Cayman Flower. That's Johnny's Cousin Steve. You're listening to it on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. The businesses, professionals, and organizations that underwrite KOPN's programming play an important role in your community radio station's financial health. When you visit a KOPN underwriter, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this radio station. We appreciate it from all of you. Thanks very much. Okay. All right. It is Mike. It is Radio Orbit. Just a few minutes after 1 a.m. now on the 15th of January, 2008. And we're talking to Dr. Patty Taylor. We're going to get right back to her on the web, www.expandedlovemaking.com. She has lots of interesting information and some products available as well. You can check it out, and we'll get right back to Patty and say hi.
Hi.
Hello. So let's talk now about technique and what people should be doing to either themselves or to their significant others.
Okay. Well,
why not, huh?
Yeah, well, that's a pretty big topic. So.
Well, maybe basics first and some anatomy lessons or something.
Yeah, okay, got it. Well, let me think about it. All right, well, the first thing you want to do...
And let's talk about the woman first, about what men should be knowing about their women or what women should be knowing about their women, or themselves, I guess.
Okay, great. Let's do that. Well, okay. Well, the clit has the greatest concentration of nerve endings in the body. Somebody said there were 8,000 nerve endings in the clit, and to which I say, who counted them?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. But if they say so, and...
But highly sensitive regardless. I mean, obviously, holy cow, a lot of nerve endings there.
Right. And so if we're going to practice expanded orgasm, this is a practice of full body, full being engagement. And what we mean by that is we want to engage our body, mind, heart, and spirit completely. And so it makes sense that we want to engage the most, you know, it makes sense to want to engage the place in us that's most concentrated in nerve endings. You know, and that would probably be then that place on the clit that has the most nerve endings.
Okay.
Just to start out with. So starting out, a woman is not going to be all that turned on. So you're going to want to get the clitoris aroused and awakened, and so, or engorged. And so...
And the clitoris swells or engorges, or does it always stay the same size? Or?
Yes, it engorges. But you, as a man or a woman, just like a man's cock would get engorged, it's the same for a woman. So her clitoris needs to get engorged in order for her to really enjoy what you're doing to her or what she's doing to herself.
Okay.
She's going to feel a lot more when she's engorged. Rule number one, anything you do to a woman, she's going to enjoy it five times as much when she's engorged.
Okay. Right.
So if you just get her engorged, mm-hmm. everything you do will be feel ten times better.
Okay.
So get her engorged.
Yeah.
So, right?
Yeah, hell yeah.
So, right, exactly. So here are some easy ways to get her engorged. Because then you can find her favorite spot, and then she'll just really thank you for it tremendously. And she may not even realize that she needs to be engorged, because it's not like they have, you know, clit education, you know, in high school, unfortunately. So you can, first of all, just talking to her and telling her that she's beautiful and you admire her pussy and looking at it. It would be a real turn-on to a lot of women because they haven't gotten a lot of approval for their genitals. And actually just taking a good look yourself would probably be, you know, because we want to really engage their hearts and their minds and as well as their bodies and their spirits. And so just starting out and just really having a gentle touch. So that means that as the giver... And we'll just say it's the man doing this to the woman.
Okay.
You want to be in a very loving and admiring place. and you want to be relaxed and really, when you just approach her, just really being in that place of worship and really admiring her and letting her, and just telling her, wow, you look really beautiful, and I'm really appreciating how pink you look, and I'm really thank you for letting me admire you. And,
right.
And helping her to relax, because she might be feeling a little nervous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
respect and appreciation and recognition of beauty, I mean, is something that everybody loves.
It does. And just because you marry her, you know, is no excuse for not doing it, you know, every single time.
Mm.
Because it's very vulnerable for a woman to spread her legs open. And it's also, you know, it's... she's going on a journey, and she's opening to trust, and it's just like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she's surrendering to your control. And if you're really going to take control, you want to communicate to her that, you know, you're trustworthy.
Right,
so
right.
By doing that, you're her hero. So, you know, we do kind of work at the level of the heart, the mind, the body, and the spirit.
Right. I love the way you just described that. I think that's why. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So we do. We thank you. We talk and we engage at all levels, because it's way more than just physical.
Mm-hmm.
So then you want to make sure your hands are relaxed, and that you're comfortable as the man. By the way, I have a DVD out, which people can get on my website, which illustrates all of this, like the right position to sit in and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely want to just make sure you're relaxed. But a few things you can do are squeeze the woman's labia. Those are her vaginal lips.
Mm-hmm.
Lips. And you can use a fair amount of pressure, and that will bring engorgement to the area. And you can actually squeeze the shaft of her clitoris, and that will bring engorgement to her clitoris. And then what you want to do for a lot of women is, and if you can just visually look at her, is you can just keep sort of squeezing, and kind of you want to use some lubrication. Not go fast. You want to actually try and slow down and maybe just apply lubrication to the area in a few very long, slow strokes, kind of up the vaginal lips after that, and kind of rest your finger kind of on her clit. And then you kind of, a really fun thing to do would be to sort of trace with the pad of your finger, kind of a line right underneath her hood, right around her clitoris.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of a place where the clitoris meets the hood. You can sort of pull back her pussy a little bit, the top of it, and just sort of see where her clit sort of comes out a little bit. And there's a kind of a place where the clitoris comes out a little bit and comes out from underneath the hood. And there's kind of a line there. Could you follow me?
Yep, I'm with you.
Right, it's like a negative space, right? Well, treat it like a positive space. So it's like, imagine it like a piece of spaghetti. And stroke that piece of spaghetti. Just trace that line from left to right.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine that it's like the face of a clock. So 12 would be the top.
Right.
3 would be, well, if she was looking down, 3 would be
to your
on
left,
her.
Right?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Left.
Uh-huh.
All right, 9 would be on her right. So for a lot of women, her most sensitive area would be right at around 2 o'clock.
Huh.
And just have the smallest, like the size of a pinhead sort of movement, with a very gentle motion. You just want to start waking up that really concentrated area with a very slow motion. And if she's doing it to herself, she can start just work playing with that area. And if she hasn't played with this area before, she might say, oh, that's not my spot, and it might not be her spot. And I know I didn't think that was my spot until I tried it, and then it turned out to be my spot. I just didn't realize it. So it may or may not be, but for about 80 to 85% of women, when they hear about this spot, it will turn out to be their spot.
Okay.
So that's what you want to do, is find there is a spot on women that is a compelling, amazing spot that feels like unbelievably good. And you want to find that spot. And often, if the man can't find it, the woman can. And then you want to have her find it so that she can then show her partner where it is.
Right. Now, this is different than the so-called G spot, though, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, because this is more on the exterior.
Right. This is on the clip.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Continue, please.
Okay, so now, so she should be, you know, and I definitely recommend lots of communication. We just have people set up what we call a sandbox, which means we're going to bracket a half an hour or an hour where we all agree the goal is to communicate in the beginning, you know, or ongoingly. We have lots of sandboxes where we just play and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And where, is this it, honey? Is that it? And what you want to do is set up like a very steady, rhythmic, continuous movement and stay on that spot that feels the very best. Now, when you get better at finding that spot, I have to say continuity is the thing that's going to really start to help you travel into higher domains.
What do you mean by continuity?
Continuity. Well, if you could just take your forefinger and start making a really small circle, let's say on your other hand, you know, just keep going around and around. And imagine how that feels. You know, and now every 8 strokes, you want to just stop. That's a peak. And it's just a half stroke that you stop.
Mm-hmm.
And, or every 6 strokes. And that's what you want. You want that continuity with thoughtful stops. If it's just crazy mixed up, 3 here, 6 there, 2 here, 5 there, you can't go anywhere.
Mm. So there's a rhythm to it, almost.
The rhythm is what puts someone into a trance.
Mm. Gosh, you know, this will probably sound familiar to you, but, you know, we talk a lot on this program about shamanic technique, and there are many different ways that a shaman, he or she might enter into an altered state of consciousness. But the rhythm is a common theme that runs through a lot of these, whether it's with a drum or through chanting or through many different ways.
Well, absolutely, and as we go on, you know, we're just starting now, but we use rhythm in many ways to build the trance. So we're just starting now with the rhythm. As we use 2 hands, we'll bring in more and more rhythm, but you have to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very good what you're saying, because absolutely we're going to use rhythm to bring this person into a trance, but we as the giver are going to impose that rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to stay connected to their favorite spot and be rhythmic, because that's what induces the trance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's the rhythm on their spot. It's kind of that combination. And we can sort of keep talking to them while we have that rhythm going. And that's what brings them deeper and deeper into the trance.
Hmm.
Now, while you're just starting out, it's, and you can meet, if you're doing this to yourself, then, of course, you're going to be rhythmic to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. Now, the thing is, after a while, you're going to want some more variety. You'll get bored with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, peak. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, peak. You know, so you'll either shorten the peaks, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, peak. 1, 2, you know, you'll either shorten them or you'll start doing, you'll do circles for 6, circles for 6, and then eventually you'll do up and down for 6, you'll do longer for 6 or faster for 6.
Yeah, it's like any good song's got a couple of changes here and there throughout the song, but there's a general rhythm that it follows.
Right, or then there'll be gradual segues into this and that, but they certainly won't be discrete jumps from one thing to another, and that's what drives people nuts. Now, eventually, but you have to learn how to stay connected to someone's favorite spot, and that's really probably, that and the continuity are the real challenges, okay? And as the giver, I'd say the other challenge is that as a woman is getting more and more turned on, she'll be surging energy at you, and as the guy, you have to stay relaxed and not just like, either you pick up all her energy and your hand might get tense or you'll just start speeding up. I mean, you have to stay really conscious and present. So you have to be like a Jedi Knight about the whole thing, you know? I mean, it's sort of fun and it can get, you have to like practice, okay? It's not like, I'm not going to lie to you and tell you it's the easiest thing you've ever done. It may be the most fun thing you'll ever do in your entire life.
But there's still an element of work and focus and all that that's required.
Absolutely.
I mean, a big element of focus. I mean,
focus, absolutely. It's profound presence.
You know, I think the great majority of people in the experience of the physical, you know, orgasm, it's the letting go of, I mean, you know, there's very little focus at that time, and it's just, you know. But I think it's very important that you make that distinction, that what you're trying to do is really grab hold of stuff as opposed to letting it all go.
Right, and these are excellent questions. And what you're doing to stay focused are a few things. Number one, you train yourself, your ego to, and it's not easy, okay, to drop your ego because you're going to screw up, okay? You're going to like, oh, you fell off the spot or you did something or you thought about, you know, like your attention wandered or, you know, and then your ego is going to say, oh, I screwed up, or you're going to like second guess. And suddenly you realize that you're just totally fucked up. And then you have to say, let that go, put your attention back on what you're doing, and you're just going to have to not give in to your ego, and you're going to have to go put your attention back on your partner, because you're going to have to train yourself to not fall off of what you're doing. If you screw up, you just go right back to what you're doing. And then the other thing, and you just train yourself, or if your partner says, I'd like it a little harder or softer, or, you know, you just say thank you, and you don't say, gee, what did I do that for? You stay very present. You have no ego. I mean, you have as little as you can. You stay very, very centered. And the other thing is you use your breath as the receiver and as the giver to channel the energy, because the energy gets very, very high. You have volcanic levels of energy eventually that are channeling through you. At times, and sometimes it's very subtle and profound, but, you know, like an atom bomb, I mean, you know, just sometimes, but, I mean, you just have huge amounts of energy that are going through you, and you have to learn how to be as springy and spongy and feathery, while meanwhile, just huge rivers of energy are pulsing through you. And you're just so still. So it's fun, though, you know, to handle all of that. You're surfing these tidal waves of energy, and your ego is getting blasted, and you're just like really still, and you're surfing these orgasmic waves, and your mind is just out inside, splattered across the universe, and it's very fun.
All right. Let me ask you about the conscious state at that point. In other words, can... Actually, I'm going to wait till after the break to talk to you about that. I'm going to save this question. But before then, I'd like to talk about, just for everyone's edification, the fact that there is, and we really haven't mentioned it much, but there's a long history behind this whole concept or these concepts as well. And there are people that have come before us that have sort of been telling us, hey, there's you're missing something here. So I don't want people to think that, you know, that although you're rediscovering much of this, I think, and I'm sure others are doing it as well, but there's a long and very interesting history that goes back thousands of years that deals with a lot of this stuff.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, hopefully people will visit my website. I have a podcast. I've interviewed, I think, 35 people so far, including Montauk Chia, mm-hmm. who did an incredible show on a lot of the expanded orgasm, and his tradition goes back thousands of years. And I don't know if he talks about expanded orgasm, but certainly they've been talking about the male extended orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
They actually do something a little different than me, but they actually do the male. They separate the ejaculation, multiple orgasm is what they do, which is kind of the same thing. It's pretty cool. I definitely think men should, you know, there's something great for men. It's very similar, where men can go on and on and on. I absolutely encourage all men to learn that. It's a little different from what I teach, but they've been doing that for thousands of years, so absolutely. And my tradition absolutely goes back thousands of years, which is the Tantra, the Kashmiri Shaivist Tantra.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been absolutely doing this forever. It's just that no one's been teaching the specifics of how to do it.
Yeah, that's the problem in many of these different, well, in shamanism, and I don't even like to use that word really anymore, but people that are trying to learn, you know, the skills that shamans use, the biggest difficulty is trying to find a good teacher. You know, the tool is sitting right in front of you. And this is a metaphor that can be used, you know, for woodworking or for making love. But you can, I mean, you got the tools. But if you don't know what to do with them, you know, you're not going to get the full, and you might even hurt yourself.
It's a huge problem in our line of work, because there's some legality issues as well. So the transmission through hands-on is particularly difficult. It's not impossible, but I think it's more difficult because of the cultural stigmas.
Mm-hmm.
In our society, there are a few people that do teach it, as well as me.
There can't be a whole lot, though, are there?
Well, I would say that Steve and Vera Badansky teach extended massive orgasm. They were on my podcast.
Extended massive orgasm. Now.
Well, I don't like the name. they teach extended orgasm, which is basically. They teach something similar in some respects, but they don't teach the journeying aspect of it at all. They
uh-huh.
They teach some useful information for people starting out.
Right.
And just listen to their podcast. They're wonderful people. I love them dearly.
Okay.
And, but no, you know what? No one teaches what I teach. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I never heard of it before.
I had so much difficulty learning what I learn, and I'll be. Would you like to hear a little story?
Yeah, and I want to preface it real fast with something for the audience, because, you know, my audience knows this isn't a typical subject for me, and you know, it's sort of off the beaten path of what I normally do. But there's a friend of mine who has been on the program a couple, three times. His name is Bruce Raphael, who you know. And I love Bruce, and I think he's doing very interesting work, and he's a very, very smart and intuitive guy. And he sent me a note and said, hey, you should really talk to Patty Taylor. She's real cool. And I said, oh, and I went to your website. I said, really? And he said, yeah, you got to talk to her. Okay, I'll do it. So I just wanted people to know that how we originally got connected was through Bruce.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you something. I taught this stuff for many years, and I was with a number of people who from Moore University, where they trained some amazing people, and so I had the experience of being with some of the most amazing people. They were a commune of people that studied how to bring people into these amazing states. So I had these incredible experiences way back when, but no one could tell me how to create, because I made it my life's mission to, like, learn and teach this stuff. I told you that story. No one could tell me how to do it. They could produce it, but they could not teach it. It was very frustrating for me. I wrote my book, Expanded Orgasm, so on and so forth. I was teaching people for many years. It wasn't until 2002 when I was out in Sedona one day and I absolutely channeled this system of teaching as a lark. And I just thought it was a joke. I was just wanting to write another book, and I just thought it was a joke. And I started teaching my husband and this friend of mine just to see if it would work in a book that I was writing. And I was very frustrated with my inability. You know, and this is after years of being a teacher, okay, and having had the experiences. I knew it was possible to go so much higher, okay. So, And suddenly, the thing that I had channeled was breaking these guys through to a whole new level. And suddenly, the people that I was teaching was breaking them through to a whole new level. And suddenly I realized, oh my God, this isn't a joke. And then I knew that what I was teaching was really working. And so no one's teaching what I'm teaching.
Wow. Amazing. All right, one more quick break, okay?
Yes.
All right, we'll be back, everybody, with Patty Taylor on the web one more time, www.expandedlovemaking.com. Lots of very interesting stuff there. And you've got a blog as well that people are participating in, and you've got your regular column and all that going, right?
I do.
Okay, you can find it all on her website, and you can link over there from my site as well, okay? All right, everybody, we will be back in just a few minutes here. We are going to play another song from Johnny's cousin Steve. This one is called The Islands. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. All these websites and different information about the people and the musicians and everything else that you're hearing tonight can be found on my site as well. Just go over there and snoop around a little bit, okay? It's Mike one more time, Radio Orbit, KOPN.
Flow like a Bob Marley song.
once again, that's the song called The Islands from Johnny's Cousin Steve on the web at myspace.com/Johnny's Cousin Steve. And you've been hearing music tonight off a CD that he released a number of years ago, back in the day when I was living back in Colorado. So thanks to Steve for making his music and for sharing it with us tonight. And thanks also to Patty Taylor for sticking up late into the evening there and sharing her words with us as well. Hi, Patty.
Hi there.
All right, look, this is an amazing thing. And the more I think about it, you know, everybody wants enlightenment. Everybody wants, you know, to find the thing that'll make them feel better. Everybody's looking for something to give themselves and their lives meaning. And they look to all different ways and shapes of things in order to get that. This is something that we've been talking about now for an hour and a half that is free. It's something that you can do yourself, and you can do it in the privacy of your own home. And it's illegal. It's illegal. It will be if they could have it, if they had anything to do about it, but they can't. So, but it's legal, it's free, and you can do it pretty much, you know, wherever you find yourself. So it's certainly something that people should be interested in. And I guess, how many of them are? I mean, what's the response to your work?
Well, what's the catch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess I don't really promote my work all that much. And I think, I don't know what to say about that.
Is it more like a network of word of mouth, where people just sort of are learning about this in the underground sort of way?
You know, I kind of just...
Not anymore, by the way.
You know, I get clients word of mouth, but it's like when I have put myself out there to get clients kind of in the real world, quote-unquote,
mm-hmm.
Just locally, I tend to get guys that are looking for sex, and or I tend to get couples, and which is okay. Who mostly I get a lot of single guys that are just looking for to get off.
Right.
And it's like so not where I'm at. And the other thing I tended to get a lot of was couples who were having problems. And unfortunately, or whatever, but I guess being Kundalini awake, my energy is very sensitive, and I'm very happy to work with people that really would like to use this for transcendence. And for expansion, and for traveling, and for those kinds of things. And it's just like I haven't quite figured out how to meet my marketplace yet. You know, and I'm kind of willing to let them find me, willing to just sort of let the universe put us together.
Right, I understand.
And I kind of believe in that, too. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to go out and find people, you know what I'm saying, to hustle. I kind of believe in the process of, you know, the right people will find me when they need to.
That's very interesting, because in a very similar fashion, like with my radio show and stuff, I don't push it at all. I don't make advertisements. I don't do much promoting for it. You know, I don't send out emails every week and say, listen on Monday. I just sort of do my thing, and, you know, whatever, whoever it reaches, those are the people it's supposed to reach, you know?
Right. Well, I'm probably a terrible business person.
Me too, by the way.
Proving that I am not the person I was before I was born again. But you know what? I don't think that this kind of stuff mixes with business. You know, it's like enlightenment and business don't really mix. They just don't. It's like, I don't know how to put it, but it's like, there has to be an integrity about this. There has to be a certain energy about this. Actually, I will backtrack. So, I mean, because it's a very personal thing. It's like I have to feel really aligned with somebody to go there with them. You know, it's
right,
very personal.
Sure, it's personal and very intimate. And
It is. It is. So having said that, I do do something. I do lead lots of workshops, and I do lead lots of play shops. I've been teaching in New York for a number of years. I am very, very popular there, if I can't say so myself. and I have been teaching a fair amount in San Francisco. And what I teach is what I call expanded lovemaking, which is really, really cool stuff. I teach people sort of how to go into an altered state. Just what I found is, since I couldn't teach everyone how to go into an expanded orgasmic state just through the law of numbers, what I discovered was you can actually go into an orgasmic state through any number of ways, and two of them are just through touching someone, and the other way is through a process of just gently rocking them. You can send them into profoundly orgasmic trances.
That's amazing. It reminds me of, you know, what we do with children. I have two young children, and it's amazing what a rocking chair can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, I had someone on my show, Barry Kamsurek, on my Expanded Lovemaking show, and we talked about that. He says, yes, it's your cerebellum. He says, it makes total sense. He wrote The Science of Orgasm.
Hmm.
So we talked about that. But, oh, absolutely. So rocking, there's a certain kind of rocking that it's not your ordinary rocking, but that will put people into, that will trigger an orgasm, literally trigger the series of contractions that will send them into orgasmic states, such that after a while you can just touch them and have them be profoundly orgasmic. And actually there's a kind of touching that you can do there's all kinds of touching that we teach where you just touch someone and send them into orgasmic rapture.
All right, let's see. We're running a little bit of short on time, so I want to get a few more questions in here.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, I think the answer to this is yes, but I'll ask it just to let you expand a little bit. Ask Patricia if extended orgasm can open portals, and then as a subtitle, that communication with entities. In other words, is this a method of communication and going to different places?
Yes, the answer is absolutely yes.
All right, so again, very similar to shamanic practice. It's amazing. I think it's the similarities are very are striking, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, and what I'd like to say is I'd like to offer that if anyone would like to write to me, I will send them a copy of my dissertation, because we did the research on the 44 people, and we specifically asked people, you know, that question, do you make contact with entities?
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not sure if we said entities, but, you know,
like spirits or
with
something.
Archetypes,
right,
and
right.
And it was a huge list of, you know, what kinds of psychic phenomena do you experience, you know, mind, body, heart, and spirit, and altered states do you go into. And there's a very, I think we asked 66 different questions of what kinds of, you know, phenomena do you encounter in altered states while you're, you know, and definitely we asked, do you encounter, you know, what proportion of the time do you encounter, make contact with, you know, things? I don't remember the exact question, but it was like none of the time, some of the time, you know, most
mm-hmm.
of the
mm-hmm.
time. And
yeah.
Not just me, but, you know, out of our 44 participants, I think it was, you know, a lot of the people did some of the time. It was, you know, a widespread phenomenon. So I invite anyone, please write to me if you want a copy of the dissertation, patriluv@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to send you a copy. You can look at the research results for yourself.
All right, pattylove@gmail.com, patiluv
at gmail.com, yes.
Okay, that's funny because I like to spell the word love, L-U-V. Well, you know, there are a lot of guys that listen to this program, and I've got a number of them saying, don't mind more about the men. How do guys do this?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, let's see. Good. Assuming that the guy is just going to be alone for a moment, because the woman...
That's mostly the case with my listeners, I think so.
Okay, right. Well, you know, if once you're alone and you can do it on your own, then you can just ask a woman, presumably. A good book to read, by the way, is Male Multiple Orgasm by Montauk Chia. If you want a good starting book. But the thing you want to do, and you don't need a book for this, is it's good to just get that you can separate orgasm from ejaculation. I think for men and women, but we're going to focus on men, relaxation is really key.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
And so, because you want to, relaxation and breathing, is you want to learn how to spread the energy up and away from the genitals. And so when you can breathe the energy up and away and spread the energy and really go into much more relaxation and just imagine that the feeling is going up and through your body and out. And what men often do is they'll practice taking themselves closer to the edge, you know, and then, you know, just, you know, backing off and then just spreading and feeling the energy and not having to go over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
really kind of slowing down and really just wanting to spread out and expand and the feelings and the energy. And you know, if they have to, there's a place called the $1 million spot that's in between the anus and the balls.
Mm.
And they can press on that if they think they're going to go over the edge, and that will stop the ejaculation.
Uh-huh.
So they want to learn that they can, and sometimes all it takes is knowing that you don't have to ejaculate. But you know what the thing is? Not all men find that they need to separate the ejaculation. Some men just learn to sort of slow down the whole process and then ejaculate at the end. That
mm-hmm.
works for some men. I mean,
mm-hmm.
every guy is different.
Right. Right.
Some men really find they want to separate out the two. It's getting in, just finding yourself right, really making this a path for yourself. Playing with your nipples will spread out the energy. Stroking your whole body, giving yourself variety, using the rhythm that we talked about before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And probably slowing down. A lot of men kind of have gotten into a rhythm where they're, I won't call it a rut, but they're in one way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And you really want to start going for variety and nuance. And I would set aside time to really open your mind and body, heart, system to really feeling the nuance and the variety and of your own, what's possible even with your own hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, and you can rub your abdomen and you can sort of spread, even with your hand, the energy up through your chest. You can just sort of drag the energy up your body and down your thighs, and really take that time to get to know yourself. You know, there's different things that you can do, and definitely if you can get your partner to engage with you like this, That would be phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And that's when you would come and see me, you know, for example, and just say, hey, we want to start a program. And
right. But when they've already got it together, though.
Or when, you know, at whatever the point is where they want to learn. But, you know, I'm just saying. But, I mean, you know, for the right couple that wants to do that.
Right, and
just,
then they can move to another level. Yeah.
You know, who just wants to have some ideas. But just for them, they could say to their girlfriend, you know, let's try this. Let's turn off the TV for an evening. I think TV is the most insidious thing sometimes. Mm-hmm. It just gets in the way of real intimacy. And I think a lot of women sort of, they're thinking, well, I don't get that much pleasure, so, you know, what's in it for me? But, you know, if you could just reverse that trend and, you know, make it really wonderful for her, whatever she wants, give her a massage or, you know, do a little trading and say, and this is what I want, and do some show and tell and just really have that exploration.
Ask Patty if she knows if there are any good strong herbal aphrodisiacs.
Well, I guess the yohimbine is supposedly the one that people recommend.
The what?
Yohimbine.
Yohimbine?
Y-O-H-I-M-B-E. Yohimbe.
Yohimbe.
Or yohimbine with an I-N-E at the end.
Okay.
Arginine is also, it's an amino acid, and that's also supposedly considered very potent for a lot of men. So.
All right, good. There's a couple. And let's see, one last one to sort of finish things off, and then I'll let you can say a few words before we close out here. But a lot of people, and this has come up before on the program, because these things sort of come up when you explore ideas outside of the general mainstream of the culture. But there's the question of monogamy. You have a relationship, you're a married woman, but you have a relationship that obviously allows you to work with other people in this line of work that you do. But for other people who are in perhaps regular relationships, do you believe that it's healthy, or I guess like we talked about earlier, sort of different strokes for different folks, but do you believe that there's a healthy way to be in a committed relationship but still be able to explore relationships with other people outside of the relationship?
Well, since I've been in a, you know, relationship like that for many years, I know it's possible. So I think where there's a will, there's a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, of course it's possible. I think a lot of people cheat on their partners, and I think a lot of people have a don't ask, don't tell policy. So I think it's a matter of, you know, I don't recommend cheating, I think, but, and I...
Yeah,
I
you should
do,
be honest about it, whatever you're doing.
Absolutely, but I do think that if the couple is interested, that this can be a really, you know, positive thing. And there's many, many ways of doing it. And it's not necessarily any easier than monogamy.
Yeah.
But in many ways, in many cases, I think that it can be just as stable of a relationship for people when that's what they need in life, you know, because sometimes what people need in life is a sense of freedom is maybe their highest value. And there are so many different forms and structures of non-monogamous relationships that, you know, you can't just categorize them all in one lump sum. I mean, there are some non-monogamous relationships where they only do, let's say, manual interaction with other people, and they save anything else for their partner. Or there's some ones where there are only certain ways with other people. And so people work it out. And I think that's what's important, is that people work it out in a loving way. And to me, that's the most important thing.
I think that's a great way to finish the program, because it's all about You know, love, when it comes down to it, and unconditional love, to me, means that you love that person no matter sort of what they do, as long as they sort of do the same thing back for you.
And respecting each other's needs and wishes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Unbelievable. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Patty, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a total pleasure. Thank you asking such great questions.
Well, I get a lot of them from the people that are shooting them at me, so it's not always me, but I appreciate the work that you're doing and everyone for listening to the program, for participating, and it was a very interesting and enlightening conversation, for sure.
Well, thank you, and, you know, people can just, you know, check out my website, drop me a line, be happy to, you know, see if I can answer it, just thank you all for listening in.
All right, wonderful. You enjoy the rest of the night, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, everybody. Wonderful stuff. Dr. Patty Taylor, once again, on the web, www.expandedlovemaking.com. And you'll be able to link over to her site from mine from here on out. And we'll have this program, of course, up in the archives in just the next couple of days. All right? All right. So take a deep breath and let me get ready to shut this radio station down. But before I do that, I will say thank you to all of you for listening to the program tonight. It was certainly a movement from the norm. And I had a blast doing it. I hope you guys did, too. I had to sort of bring the mic down a couple times because I started giggling. But I was able to keep my composure. Hopefully nobody noticed. And now I just gave away all my secrets. So, at any rate, wonderful stuff. And I had a great time tonight. I hope you all did, too. We'll come back and do it again next week. We'll have the wonderful Dr. Michael Heisen and Star Newland. We'll talk about dolphins and whales and communication and language and space travel and all the stuff that those crazy people are doing out there in the Hawaiian Islands, working with our Cetacea brothers and sisters, all right? Okay, Mike Hagan, Radio Orbit, KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM. Y'all take care of yourselves. We're going to finish things off here with one more from Johnny's cousin Steve. This is the last track on the CD I got in my hands here. It's called Got a Little More. How about it? Take care of yourselves. Talk to you in 6 days, 21 hours. Out. Thought we'd take a walk down in the town and howl.